Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, this is Mac, and you're listening to Mac's Musings. Excuse me. Okay, I've been having a lot of fun here. People have been calling in when the show's not even on the air. So hopefully I can get through to the person who's actually supposed to be on the air with me. And hopefully I dialed it right, because I've been trying to do like 100 things here at once. So, and at least it's dialing.
Hello?
Hello, Tim?
Yes.
This is Mac.
Yes.
I did dial the right number, didn't I?
Yes.
Okay.
This is Tim.
Because I've always... the reason why I asked to make sure is because I've already had like 3 wrong numbers that they kept me on the phone for a while because one thought they were talking to Pastor somebody that I have no idea who they're talking about. And I'm like, no, you dialed the wrong number. So you can hear me okay, right?
Yes, I can.
Okay, and I can hear you. So we should be on the air. And so I'll just get started so I don't ruin too much of your show here. Now, I know that you were in the Air Force for 4 years, and I'm the daughter of a now-deceased veteran from World War II. So I do want to thank you for your service. It's much appreciated, and I mean that truthfully. Some people just say it because they're used to saying it.
Right.
So
did you
want to talk about your service?
Like, what about it?
You don't have to. Well, no, some people do like to talk about what they did in the service, and others don't. And I don't make any presumptions. Yeah, I don't make any presumptions. Out of the last 4 guests, 3 guests before you that were in the service, 2 of them wanted to talk about it, and 1 of them didn't. So, you know, if you don't, that's fine. To me, it doesn't matter either way, because I understand.
No, that's fine. So like I said in my post, I worked on B-52 aircraft. I was an electronic technician on the bombing and radar systems. I loved my job. I really liked working on the aircraft. It was the military side of things, I guess, I really didn't like. Worked a lot of weekends, a lot of overtime. And then, of course, no extra pay.
Well, of course not.
They pretty much do own you. Like, you are at their disposal. So.
Mm-hmm.
And I got in trouble one time because an exercise had kicked off during the weekend and I was gone. I had gone home for the weekend, and when I came back, they made me work the next 3 weekends because it wasn't fair to the other airmen. So things like that didn't really set too well with me, but like I said, I did love my job, and it actually helped me my career, what I ended up doing afterwards as well. So no complaints.
Well, that's good. Now, I think you were 13 when you made a 3-minute film called The Creep that you shot on Super 8.
Yes.
So tell us a little bit about that.
So I don't know if you've ever seen I Was a Teenage Werewolf.
Yes.
With Michael Landon.
Yes, I have.
I Was a Teenage Frankenstein.
Yeah, I've seen that one too.
Okay, right. So it was basically kind of a 3-minute movie of that idea type thing. Shot it on my parents' 8mm Super 8. So I just kind of say that's kind of my start as far as filmmaking and all that. I've always really been into it. But I really didn't start acting until later. Because, I don't know, I guess I just figured, I always thought, you know, you had to be this blonde-haired, blue-eyed guy. So I was, somebody talked me into basically, they said, well, because they could tell, like, I've always really been into movies, horror movies, and the whole special effects process always fascinated me. I had a subscription to Fangoria magazine when I was really young. I just always loved all that kind of stuff. And somebody was like, well, you need to just get some headshots done and pursue it. So that's kind of where I started.
Cool. Now, you're a drummer, too, in, I guess, a couple of rock bands, which I would assume that you haven't been playing that much since the pandemic started.
No.
But you still play. And so tell us about this. Tell us about doing that and about Victor's Castle.
Okay, so I've been playing for, probably 35 years now. In various rock bands on and off. I actually played in a heavy metal band when I was in the Air Force, believe it or not. And that was in the early 80s when short hair was not in. So I always felt like I was always going to buy a wig for gigs because I felt like I didn't fit in. Like I had the military haircut and everybody else in the band had long hair and playing in a heavy metal band. But nowadays that wouldn't be far from things because there's a lot of people with shorter hair now playing in bands.
Right.
But so that was the start of that. Victor's Castle ended up being more of a recording project last year. I had hooked up with a new band, some people I didn't know. A friend of mine, fellow musician, had told me about these guys were his friends. They were looking for a drummer. So I met with them. They were really cool, really into the same kind of music I was. And then I was like, well, I want to go in the studio again. Like I've been in the studio a few times with some other bands. And the day before we were supposed to have a meeting with the producer at the studio, the singer called me and said he wasn't doing it. And at that point, we didn't have a bass player either. We had gone through a few bass players. And I called the guitar player, so it was just mainly him and I. And we were basically the writers in the band, like writing the music. And I told him I didn't care at that point. I had worked with the producer before. I said, I still want to meet with him and go through everything. So obviously we did. And the kind of weird thing was we wrote the song and we actually tracked the guitar and drums before we even got a singer. We had recorded the music and it's exactly how you hear it. And then we looked for a singer. So that was kind of different, actually.
Found one.
Yes. Yeah. Well, actually, we ended up using two. We had auditions, and what we did was we got a hold. These people were interested, and the deal was they had to write lyrics to the song, come in, and basically do a recording session, and then we would pick who we liked. And it was funny listening because it actually felt like two different songs with these two singers because they had two totally different styles. So mm-hmm. We ended up using both of them. It was kind of what I call like a, the one guy sings the main vocals, and the other guy basically what I call like answers him, like repeats what he says or kind of answers back. That's that gave it more of a melodic feel. It's kind of a progressive metal type song. And then we ended up, the guitar player left, so I said, yeah, this ended up being more of a recording more of a recording project than a band, I guess, but
well, you know, those things happen, I guess.
Right. So so right now I have a old school punk band, all original. I've been with a guitar player for 17 years in this band. We had basically kind of split off. We got sick of playing the same venues all the time. And we just got back together with a new bass player who actually is the singer from the recording project. That's how that all works. Because we found out he played bass. And so I was like, wow. And he actually knew of the punk band. It actually came and seen us, I guess, before. And but that was right before the pandemic. So we just got him up to speed on songs and doing well. And then the pandemic hit. So, so no shows. we still practice, but so that's where the music is.
Now, you're also a professional photographer. So what kind of work do you do there? You know, do you do, like, magazine covers or what have you?
It's more of a hobby. I do I was going out and shooting a lot of local bands at venues. Live shots, which being a musician myself, I really got into doing. And since the pandemic, I've actually done a lot more wildlife photography, going to different parks and different things. I've done a couple of weddings. I've done some family, usually like holiday time, like this time of year. I have this one couple and their kids that I've done pictures for them for like 2 or 3 years now. Holiday time. And then I'm actually shooting some senior pictures this weekend.
When you say senior, do you mean senior as in high school or senior as in old fogies like me?
Senior as in high school. It's funny you said that because I was watching some YouTube videos on it, and the one guy was giving it was a video of him giving a presentation on shooting senior photos, and that was his line when he came out. He pulled up his slides, he pulled up this picture of his grandmother, and he said something about senior pictures, and then he started laughing. He's like, no, you know, that's not why we're here. So, yeah, that's kind of funny you said that.
Yeah, that is, because it wasn't intended, because I had no idea about any of that. That is funny. Now, in 2007, at least according to IMDb, was your first acting job in 100 Tears. So tell us about that.
That's what I consider my first movie. I did a couple other ones before that. I don't think ever even got finished. But so that is a killer clown movie by Marcus Cook, who's very well known. He helped write it and he directed it and did all the special effects. It's considered like a big gore fest. It's super gory. It's a cult classic at this point, actually. It's hard to find. I get my leg chopped off.
Oh.
So, but I'm the only one that actually did fight back against the clown. I had probably more screen time than any of the other people that got killed in the film. But so kind of a backstory on that. This is where, what I always say, the music and the movie business is a lot alike. So there was a band, back then that my punk band did a show with. They were from Florida and we got to be really good friends. And the manager, contacted me after they got back. They did kind of an East Coast club thing. And, they had gotten a hold of Marcus, who's a big punk rock fan, and gave him our stuff. He loved it. And then I found out he was a movie director, writer, and him and I were talking, and I said, well, you know, I'm an actor as well. And he said, well, we can always use more bodies. So off to Florida I went in a couple of months and got to be in his film, and actually one of our songs is in the soundtrack for it as well.
Oh, cool.
So, yeah, I consider that one.
Now, were you done talking about that? Because there's like a little gap that I can't always tell if you're still talking.
Okay.
Were you done talking about the 100 Tears?
Yeah, I just said again that was, I consider that basically my first film that I did.
Oh, okay, good. Yeah. I wouldn't mind seeing that. In 2013, you did a short. You were actor and technical advisor on something called Rhythm. Now, I picked this one because I thought, well, with a name like that, maybe it had to do with you playing the drums or something. But maybe not. I don't know. So tell us about Rhythm.
Okay. I never put that together. No, it has nothing to do with drums or music. It's I basically play a retired hitman, where it comes back around. I killed, the beginning of the film, I kill this kid's parents, and he walks in, catches me with the smoking gun, so to speak. And then I get out of doing that. And then he comes after me. And so he basically turns into the killer.
Mm.
And I also won Best Western New York Actor Award at the Buffalo Dreams Film Festival for that as well.
Oh, wow. Well, congratulations.
Thank you. And it also, so the local kid, young guy that made the film, he was going to college for film. He got in at one best student film as well.
Oh, well, that's nice. I understand that you don't need to get a bunch of recognition, but yet when you do get it, it's always nice.
Right. Yeah, definitely.
Let's see which one, because I'm kind of skipping over some of them because I wanted to make sure to get to the ones that you had mentioned that you wanted to talk about. 2015, you were an actor and you also executive produced a film called Killer Rack. So tell us about that one.
And yes, it is what it sounds like. It's a horror comedy. It was written by an actor friend of mine, Paul, in Buffalo, and directed by Gregory Lamberson, who has done his, he did Slime City was his big movie in the late 80s. And then he did a follow-up to that 10 years ago, Slime City Massacre. That's considered, Slime City is considered like a cult classic as well. I've been in quite a few of Greg's films. So it's about a, it also stars Debbie Rochon.
Oh, wow.
Anybody, and Lloyd Kaufman has a supporting role in it as well. It's not just a little cameo appearance either. So it's basically this girl wants a boob job. She gets one and they're possessed and they eat people.
That's funny.
It actually is. It's a really good film. It's really funny. It's got a lot of, like a lot of the humor in it. It's kind of like what I used to say when we did the film, if the guys who did Airplane did a horror movie, it'd be Killer Rack. It's that kind of humor.
Well, yeah. I have to say that I would agree that that would probably be true. That would sound like something they would want to make.
And there's a lot of references in it to other films, like some of the dialogue and things.
Oh, cool. I like stuff like that, too, in movies.
Right.
Yeah. Now, one of the ones that you wanted to talk about was in 2017, you acted in it, and the name of it is Claw. So tell us about that one.
So the reason I had brought that up was Tina Krause was on your show about a month ago.
Yes.
She's in the film. I really wasn't. I played a redneck cab driver in that one. So obviously, it's a horror film. Tina's character and two other people come to town from the city to. Investigate this kind of a urban legend type story, I guess, or this guy they found this article about, and that's the killer.
Mm-hmm.
I got the claw, so when I pick them up, obviously I pick them up at the train station to take them where they want to go. And the last I knew, that was on Tubi. I don't know if it is anymore.
Oh, I'll have to check it out and see if it is.
Yeah, I'm not sure. That was a fun shoot. I was only there a couple of days.
Hey, as long as you have fun, that's one of the most important things, other than,
yeah,
you know,
yeah,
getting
exactly.
paid.
We get paid too.
Well, sometimes I know in the indie film business, it doesn't happen as often as it does in the Hollywood. Although in Hollywood,
right.
they cheat you out of money too. So.
Yeah, right.
So I did want to move on. If you were done, that is.
Yeah, no, I'm done with that.
Okay. To ask you about your short, The Door, that you acted in, you produced it, you directed it, and you also wrote it. And then that led to the Showdown in Yesteryear, which is in post-production, that you acted in, producer and director. So tell us about The Door. And then how that progressed into the Showdown in Yesteryear.
Okay. So The Door, actually the idea started out. So the younger guy who did Rhythm, who was done many films, short films. Well, I think we've done three or four together since. He had told me about this idea about a horror film with a door in the middle of the woods type thing. And 2 years ago, I was in Ohio. I don't know if you know where Dogwood Pass is.
Yeah, I live in Ohio. And, that doesn't mean I know
right.
where everything in Ohio is. But
right,
yes,
no,
I know.
I know. Well, that's why I'm asking you. It's in Beaver, Ohio, about an hour outside of Columbus.
Mm-hmm.
It's a Western town that this gentleman built, and they do Wild West reenactment shows on weekends. And I was actually acted in a film shot there 2 years ago, which hasn't been finished yet. It's still in post-production, I guess. So I got to be good friends with the owners of Dogwood Pass. And then when I was thinking about doing a film of my own, the door idea came to me, and I was like, I got access to this West town and I really want to utilize it. It's because it's a great location, like, for doing any kind of a Western.
Yeah.
So I came up with the script for the door where the gentleman finds his door in the woods. And once he goes through it, it puts him in the 1800s Wild West.
Ooh.
And then he, of course, has to explain, like, some things, like, because he went back in time, pretty much. Kind of like Back to the Future, I guess, as some
yeah.
people have referenced. So that was my idea for that. It's won, I think, 6 awards so far in the film festival circuit.
Wow.
It just won in October, first part of October. It won 2 awards. One for Jeff Grinnell, who's plays the main character. And it won Best Short. And this was at the Wild Bunch Film Festival in Arizona, which is all Westerns. The film festival, everything, all the films in it are Western. It has to be a Western. So those awards meant more to me than any of them because of the films we were up against, and that everything there had to be was a Western. So to me, that meant a lot.
Huh. Mm.
So,
wow.
So everybody, after we shot the film, I showed the, I went back to Ohio last Halloween time frame, late October. The film had been finished, and I showed it to everybody there and the owner of the West town. Everybody loved it. He loved it. He's like, he's had other things shot there. He said that's the best thing that's been done here production wise. And everybody kept telling me, you know, you need to turn this into a full feature movie or a TV show or something. Like, there's just so much potential there. So, so then I actually, Greg Lamberson, who did Killer Rack, who directed Killer Rack, I contacted him. I sent it to him. He really liked it. He told me, cause he runs guys that runs the film festival in Buffalo. And he told me, he said, this will do really well at film festivals. So I contacted him in April and asked and hired him to write the script for the feature. And I also was able to cast Vernon Wells as the Western town tycoon.
Cool. I've had him on my show too.
Oh, did you really?
Yeah.
Yeah,
he's
Vernon,
really nice.
Yes, definitely. Super nice guy. You would never know he was as big of a name as he is because he's just super personable. He was only there for a couple of days. I think it was the second day. He came to me that morning and he was like, because of his diet or whatever, he didn't always eat what we had for meals, but he said he didn't want to leave. He wanted to set the second day and he wanted to make sure he ate with everybody else. Like, he's like, I don't want them to feel like I'm not approachable type thing, you know? So I just thought that was really cool of him.
It was.
He was a lot of fun. He would ask me what I wanted. He's like, you're the one paying the bills, like whatever you want, you know, I'm here to do what you want and what's needed. So, I mean, sometimes you don't even get that from independent actors, let alone somebody with his status. But.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. So, well, yeah. You know, it's like with anything else, people are people, and some people that are in the, and now that's not to say that there's not people in the independent business that aren't big stars in their own right, but there are some that they really haven't even done much of anything, but yet they act like they're, you know what,
right,
doesn't stink. You know?
And those are the people that are usually like that too, from my experience.
Yeah.
It's like the people that haven't done anything. So.
Yeah.
You know, whatever.
Well,
like
So, were you going to say anything else about? Because you're welcome to. You can say as much as you want about it, about the showdown in yesteryear.
Yeah, like I said, Gregory Lamberson wrote the script based on the short. Aaron Bratcher was the DP cinematographer. We actually kind of co-directed. He did a lot of the directing, actually. I mean, since it's my film, I obviously had some say in things, but Aaron's a go-getter and he's like, you get tired just watching him work. So, so if there's something I didn't agree with or whatever, I would speak up. But yeah, so but you'll see in the door, like he shot and did that one as well. So, and he's also the editor on both films. Hopefully that will be done. I'm hoping for like a June release. Hopefully. I mean, I don't have any idea at this point. Sound, I'm very particular on sound. I have a really good sound engineer I use, Matt Smith. He worked on The Door as well. I don't know. That's one of the things, because that's one of the things me watching and doing this for a while that gets at this level, it's really bad sound can ruin a movie. Like, I don't care what it looks like. The sound is horrible. It's, you know.
Oh, yeah.
So that's one of the other things I'm really proud of with The Door as well. Like, it's, and I've even had people comment on that. Like, the audio quality on that's great. So, like I said, hopefully next summer, Showdown in Yesteryear will be out. And, take it from there. Hopefully I can get distribution and you'll see it on Amazon.
Yeah, I hope so. That would be nice. Actually it was just last year, Evil Under the Sun, that you acted in with Pam Such, because I had her on the show too.
Right.
You wanted to talk about that one.
Yeah, Evil Under the Skin, that's on.
Oh, Sun. I don't know why I had Sun down here. Yeah, Evil Under the Skin. Yes. I don't know why I wrote Sun.
Yeah.
I'm glad you knew the name of it. Okay, go ahead.
Yeah, so that was another film I was in. It was just released. Yeah, just before I left for Ohio to shoot Showdown. It was like first part of September. directed by Jeff Snyder, written by Luke Bernier, which I've worked with Luke quite a bit. And yeah, it's kind of a psychological thriller. I play like this creepy brother of Donna Hamlin's, the actress that plays my sister. Donna and I have done, I think we've done like 5 films together now.
Wow.
Great actress, a lot of fun. Her and I always have a lot of fun, and we definitely had a lot of fun on this shoot playing the creepy brother and sister. Yeah, we still joke back and forth on Facebook about it. I call her sister, and when I comment back or whatever on her posts, and people are always asking if she's really my sister or if I'm really her brother.
Well, that's how good of an actor you are.
Yeah, she's a lot of fun. So one of the things about that, we shot that, what was that? We shot that almost 2 years ago. And last year we shot, it was the same people, Jeff, Luke, Donna. We shot three features in like 3.5 weeks.
Wow.
I was in 2 of them. I think most everybody was in all 3. I was only in 2 of them because I had to come back. It was shot in Oregon near Portland. So the next one, I think the next one Jeff is releasing is Red versus Wolf. Oh, and Helene Udi was in these as well, because we're the two main characters
wow.
in Red versus Wolf. It's basically like a thriller. I call her on her cell phone. She's running in a park, and I taunt her on the phone. I keep taunting her on the phone and telling her if she doesn't do what I say, I'm going to kill her type thing. So I think that's the next one Jeff is planning on releasing. He's still working post-production on it.
Sounds exciting.
Yeah, that one was, Jeff's a lot of fun to work with as well. I usually have a lot of fun on set. That's one of the reasons I like doing it, that, and I meet people and make friends all over. So,
yeah, and that's always a good thing when you make friends, especially in the movie business, because you never know, you may end up working with them.
Right. And I always say, now I know why Tim Burton and those people use Johnny Depp. They use the same actors all the time, because once you get that rapport and you get that where the actor's knows what the director wants,
Right.
So then you just, and then after that, you start writing with those people in mind. And I understand all that now, because I used to always say, well, why do they use the same people all the time? I kind of get all that.
I don't know why some people don't understand that, because it's the same reason for, well, not always the same reason, because sometimes it was because they had contracts. But way back in the old days when movies were new, they did it for the same reason most of the time, that they knew how these actors worked, and they knew the actors knew what to expect from the directors, and that's why they always ended up working together. And it's the same thing now. I mean,
Right. Yep. Yeah. I mean, and that means a lot to me when I've worked for and acted in a film for somebody, and then they contact me later and say, I would like you to be in this film. You know, that means a lot to me. Obviously they liked what I did, and I just kind of feel a connection at that point. Like, I mean, so even though I knew Luke, for Evil Under the Skin, I knew Luke, but, I still had to do a video audition for Jeff, which I didn't care. Like, I understand, like, you've never seen me act. You've never worked with me. You don't know what kind of person I am. So, so I guess he liked that as well. he did say, I remember talking to him about that, and he said he liked my audition because I can't remember exactly what it was at the end of it. I was like joking around. I made a joke or something, and I guess he just liked that aspect. That so it wasn't anything that was part of the sides or the script or anything. It was just something I came up with. It was just kind of joking around. And he said he could tell, like, from that, you never know.
Well, no, and you do, I wouldn't say you necessarily need it, but it does help a lot if you've got some kind of a gimmick, for lack of a better word, that you do something that somebody else doesn't do to get yourself noticed.
Right. Yeah, you... but I always say, you know, you got to take chances. As stupid or goofy as it sounds with something, if you think it'll fit the character, do it. You know?
Yeah.
And that's one of the things I like working with Jeff. He actually, lots of times, he'll tell you to just do whatever. He wants to know your take on a scene with your character. And, you know... maybe he'll use it, maybe he won't, but, you know, he gives you that freedom. And he actually had Donna and I remember the one day we were done shooting, and he said, he was like, for tomorrow, he goes, I want you guys to basically write in a scene of your own for it. Come up with something.
That's funny.
So... that kind of stuff I really like. And I'm the same way. Like I don't expect people to know the dialogue word for word. I think it comes out a lot more natural if they just deliver it the way they would talk, as long as it has the same content.
Right. Well, it sounds like you were done talking. So,
yes.
You were talking. Okay. Because that's funny, because this one guest I had, he wasn't, you know, rude or mean or anything. It's just that the way he said it was like, well, I should know this. Because I said, well, were you done talking and about that? And he goes, well, if I stop talking, then I'm done talking. And I said, well, the thing is that I've had some guests, and I'm not saying that that's you. I was talking about, you know, other guests.
Right.
excuse me. That they would be talking and then they would stop. So I would assume that they were done. And then I would start talking. Yeah, and they would start talking at the same time. And so then I'm saying, oh, well, excuse me, I thought you were done. And like, oh, no, I just took a breath. I was like, okay, well, you know. So that's why I don't like to assume. So that's why I ask. I'm not trying to be like,
No, that's fine. No, I know. I get it.
Because I know that if I was a guest, I would rather be asked if I was done talking than for somebody to just assume I was done. And I had a lot more to say.
Right. No, I get it. That's fine.
Yeah. Well, it's off-putting to some people, I guess. Obviously not you, but it was to this guy, which, you know, I don't understand that. Because everybody else that I've had on the show, including, you know, the bigger name people, they told me later, after the show was over, they said, "Well, you know, I really liked the way you made sure I was done talking." And I said,
right.
"To me, that's just being polite." So, but to move on, you were saying you wanted to talk about Star Trek on the show. So what did you want to say about Star Trek?
Well, I've seen on your page or whatever that you're, you say you're not a Trekkie, but from what I saw, you are.
Well, it all depends on what you call Trekkie.
True.
Because, see, to me, there's hardcore, and I'm not that.
Right. Oh, yeah.
And I'm not even really, like, semi-hardcore, because I don't get dressed up as Klingons or Vulcans or anything like that and go to conventions. I'm not saying I've never been to a convention, but I don't dress up and do the whole nine yards of that thing and go whole hog crazy like some people where they do that in their regular everyday life. They dress up in costumes and go to their jobs and want people to call them Admiral and stuff like that. No, I don't do none of that.
I'm going to send you a picture, okay, through Messenger.
Okay. Oh, you're doing it
okay.
Now?
Yeah.
Yeah, I would have to get into Facebook because I'm not on there right now.
But
yeah, I like the shows, and I like the movies, and I do have a lot of people from Star Trek as my friends, and some of them I haven't met, some of them I have, some of them I've been real-life friends with for years, but I still don't think that makes me a Trekkie per se. So are you saying you're a Trekkie?
No, I'm not. I don't dress up as anything. So I will have to say NTG is my favorite. Okay.
Before you finish that, yes, I see. That's a picture of your tattoo. Very cool. Oh, nice.
So it's faded a lot. The red is totally gone. I don't know why it faded so bad over the years. But
no.
So do you know what that says underneath?
I can't really tell.
It's Klingon.
See, that's what I mean. I'm not that big of a Trekkie. A Trekkie knows Klingon. So I only know a few words in Klingon. Mostly bad words.
Oh. So there's actually kind of a story behind this tattoo. So it says Beej, which is punishment in Klingon.
Mm-hmm.
And I, years back, I had a board game. It was this Klingon board game. And you, certain parts play, I haven't played it in years, certain part places on the board, it has you play a VHS videotape.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the one Klingon comes on. It's a Klingon game. And one of the things on there, he would say, "You must experience Beej," which is punishment. So I used to play it with my nephew. And we used to say that to each other all the time. So I got the Klingon symbol tattoo, and I'm like, I'm going to put Beej underneath it and see if anybody ever knows what it is.
Yeah, well, see, a true Trekkie would know what that is, but see me, I just looked at it and went, I don't know.
It's got some weird lettering underneath it.
So I didn't mean to cut you off before you started to tell me about what you liked about Star Trek, or you started talking about the different Star Treks that you like. So was it the Next Generation, you said?
Yeah, TNG became my favorite. And Worf was my favorite character.
I love Worf.
I have every Worf figure that I know that exists, that I'm aware of anyway. I'm sure there's more out there. I actually had Michael Dorn autograph one of them. And it's one of the ones that's hard it's one of the ones that's hard to find. But I have to tell you, that was kind of a turnoff because he was very unpersonable. Took my $40, signed it, and next. Didn't even say anything to me. It wasn't like, hey, what's going on? What's your name? Blah, blah, blah. Just, he asked me what name I wanted to put on it, and he wrote to Tim. I can't remember exactly what it says, and then autographed it, and then took my $40, and off I went. So that was kind of disappointing to me.
Yeah. I mean, I know that, you know, just like with anybody else, they can have a bad day. And that's probably
right.
What it was, because I've heard from other people, and whenever I've met him, he's always been okay, you know, not overly nice, but he's always been okay to me. And I've heard other people say that he's just like a great, funny guy. So I guess, like with a lot of people, it just depends on when you catch them.
Right.
But still, they should know that when you're with your fans, that if you act like that, that's like, especially if they've never met you before, that's what they're going to remember, that they dissed
right.
you.
Pretty much. I mean, I understand there was a line of people, but, I mean, you could have said a couple of things to me. I mean, I just felt here's my $40 and here's your signature. Bye. So.
Oh, that's that's real. Well, yeah, a lot of them just don't think, or they have a bad day. And well, it's just like with anybody who's in customer service, because really that's what it is. It's
right.
customer service. That
right.
a lot of these people that work in customer service shouldn't be working in customer service because they have no customer service skills.
They have no personable skills. Yes, I know. They hate their job.
Yeah.
And it's your fault they're there.
Right. Now, have you ever heard of the many loves of Dobie Gillis?
Oh, yes.
Okay. Well, you know, like I say, I don't like to assume anything. But the actor that played Dobie Gillis, Dwayne Hickman.
Okay.
He's an artist. Now, he was doing a show for his art, you know, and selling his art at a local place in Mentor, Ohio. Because the place is like closing down now, but it was a great big art place where people could go and sell their art, and they would do consignments and stuff like that. And it was like almost hoity-toity, because you'd go in there and they'd have the little finger sandwiches and stuff, and you could get the little drinks. And it was very nice, though. Don't get me wrong. It was very, very nice.
Right.
But you really kind of had to be dressed up. So I went there with a friend, an older friend who was terminally ill, and they were a big fan of Dwayne Hickman, and they were actually not feeling that well that day, but they really, really wanted to meet Dwayne Hickman. So we stood in this big long line waiting, and we had a painting of his, because what people were doing was they were picking out the paintings they wanted, and then they were going up to have him sign it. So
right.
we had a painting. And when we got up there, and we were the only ones left, it's not like there was a big long line or anything. We were the only ones there. And he didn't even look at us and said, I got to get back to work, and then turned right around and didn't even look at us, and both of our jaws dropped to the floor. And so this person who was terminally ill, you know, you couldn't even sign the painting. So then I made sure I made a stink because I'm that way. I took that painting and I set it down and I said, I think you know where you can shove this, you nasty little mofo. Like, man, and I was just going to be spending, it was something like a $250 painting because we had money to buy that kind of stuff then, or rather they did, not me. But, yeah, so it's like a $250 painting and you can't bother to.
Right.
So then, of course, when they complained about it, then, no, we're always real nice. I mean, no, you weren't nice. And of course, that's what they remember, and that's what I remember. That's what I remember
right.
about him, was that he was a little P-R-I-C-K. well, I didn't mean to take up your time with my stuff, but that puts
that's
us
fine.
Like our last 3 minutes. So if you want to tell people how they can get in contact with you, that's usually what I do near the end of the show, you know, whether it be
okay.
Facebook or if you want them to email you or not to contact you at all, like one guest said, and I don't want anybody to contact
you. Damn.
Yeah, that's a whole nother show. So, so if you want to go ahead and tell people how they can contact you.
Yeah, I'm on Facebook, Timothy O'Hearn, O-H-E-A-R-N. I'm on Instagram as well, Crow the Actor. That's the two bigger ones I use pretty much. And then you can find, I have pages for The Door. The movie is the page. Showdown in Yesteryear movie is the page for that. I just started a couple weeks ago. You want to keep track of what's going on with those two things. And Crowtography is my photography page. And there is a page for Victor's Castle, my metal band recording project. And the punk band is actually called the Push Rods. And I admin all of those. So.
Oh, well, that's nice. You take care of your stuff yourself and gives it more of a personable feel for any of your fans or even somebody that might want to give you a job or something. You never know.
Right.
I'm not saying it's going to happen. I'm just saying it's a possibility.
Right.
So,
well, actually, believe it or not, I did a movie for Luke. The first movie when I met Luke Bernier, he found me on IMDb. So it does work.
Oh, yeah. That happens.
Yeah.
And one of the things that I do online is I introduce people to each other. And it doesn't always get them to work together, but sometimes they do. I've had people on the show that ended up working together because they had been introduced to each other by me, and they ended up working
nice.
Together.
No,
yeah,
that's
I mean,
nice.
It doesn't always happen. Yeah, but it,
well,
you know, it can happen.
You'd got my name from Phil, right?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it was. Yeah, he... Because there have been so many people that give me different names, but I'm pretty sure since you specifically mentioned him, it probably was. So now we're down to like the last 30 seconds. So is there anything that you want to say in closing?
Actually, I have a movie coming out the last part of December called Pawn's Volition. It's a action movie about this dysfunctional brothers who rob a bank, and I play a disgruntled old detective that's chasing them.
No, cool.
And there's
All
actually
right,
a trailer on YouTube if you look it up. Pons Volition.
Okay. All right. Wow. Cool. All right. So I'm going to have to close out because they only give like 2 minutes extra sometimes. Sometimes they don't even give that. And if you're in the middle of talking, they don't care. They just cut you off.
Okay.
So my guest tonight was Timothy O'Hearn. It was a pleasure having you on the show. And I wish you much success in the future. And stay safe. Have a good night. And I'm just going to go ahead and say goodbye.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Bye.
Okay. Bye.